Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rounding Third Sports. I'm your host, Steve, and let's get started. So today we're going to talk some NBA. I know I have not talked much NBA since starting this podcast, but we're going to talk a little bit about some signings, some ownership. We're going to talk standings. We're going to talk this new play-in tournament that they have. We're going to talk about all that kind of stuff. We'll then transition over to the NFL, and they've released the latest, or I guess the first, win projections for the season, for this upcoming season. I think it's too early for that, and I'll talk about that here in a little bit, but it seems a little early for that. But I'll give you my thoughts on the win projections, and then we'll talk a little draft rumors. Again, I'm not doing my mock draft this year or this week. I did my first one last week. I said I wasn't going to do one this week. I'm going to do my final mock draft next week as we come up to the final week before the draft. So from there, I will go over to college football. We'll talk some spring games and some stuff going on with that. And then I'll end the podcast talking about Major League Baseball as well. So jumping right in to the NBA. If you would have told me after this player got drafted that he would be playing for at least his fifth team, maybe his sixth team. At least his sixth team, if not his seventh team. I don't think I would have believed it. But here we are, 26-year-old Jabari Parker, former number 2 overall pick from Duke University, signing with the Boston Celtics. This is after he's had stints with the Sacramento Kings, the Atlanta Hawks, the Chicago Bulls, the Milwaukee Bucks. There's another team I'm missing in there. But he has had a rough time. And, you know, he was highly touted coming out of Duke, but has literally fallen flat. So I don't know what else to say there. You know, I do, in a sense, feel bad for him. You know, he had not one, but 2 ACL tears in the beginning of his career. So it makes it rough. But he now signs with the Celtics. He's going to compete with 2 other guys for the backup power forward position. So he would be, if he wins that battle, he would be the backup to Jason Tatum. So again, he still has to clear all of the NBA's health and safety protocols to make sure he is fit enough to continue playing. But here's to hoping that Jabari Parker has a good recovery this time and can produce for Boston. You know, I hate to see a guy highly touted like that and who just falls flat. And honestly, we see a lot of that. You know, if we went back the last 10 years to the top 10 of the draft, which now I'm curious, I wonder how many have been busts. So I will try to pull that up. Well, look at this. They've got an article about the biggest draft lottery bust over the past 10 years. So that's perfect. We'll look at this and see who's on this list before we move on. So they have a rating system called a value over replacement player. And for that rating, in a single season, if you're a 5 or a better, you would be considered an all-NBA first team selection. If you're a 0, you would be an average player. If you're a -2, you would be an end of the bench player, replacement level. All right, so the top 10 biggest busts in the last 10 years. So we're going to start at number 10 in 2015. Now, I'm not saying this is the correct ranking. I'm just giving you the 10 players. So in 2015, number three overall pick from Duke, Jahlil Okafor. Career scoring average, 11.5. Career value over replacement player, -1.5. So Okafor was drafted over Kristaps Porzingis. Just saying. The next player, number 2016, the number four overall pick, Dragon Bender. Career scoring average 5.3 and value over replacement for his career, -1. So he was drafted over Jamal Murray. And honestly, I couldn't even tell you who this guy is. The next one, in 2012, the number five overall pick, Thomas Robinson from Kansas. I remember seeing that pick and wondering why that was the pick. I know he had a good college year, but that just blew my mind. Career scoring average 4.9, value over replacement, -1.3. He was drafted over Damian Lillard by the Sacramento Kings. 2010, this one breaks my heart. 2010, number two overall pick, Evan Turner from the Buckeyes, drafted to the 76ers. Career average 9.9, so the best one so far. Value over replacement player, 0.1. So he was drafted over DeMarcus Cousins, who honestly, in my opinion, has been kind of a bust in and of itself. But Evan Turner was Conference Player of the Year, led the Big Ten in scoring, rebounding, second in assists and steals. He was one of the best all-around players that came out of college that year. The only one better was John Wall, according, you know, at the time. But he did struggle. He definitely did struggle. All right, in 2011, the number two overall pick, Derek Williams from Arizona, got drafted to Minnesota. Career average 8.9, value over replacement -2.6. Drafted over Kawhi Leonard. Again, another player I don't even know who that is. 2009, number six overall pick. So this is a couple years old, actually. But 2009, number six overall pick, Johnny Flynn. Career scoring average 9.2, value over replacement -2.7. Drafted over Steph Curry. I remember that as well. All right, 2011, number 10 overall pick, Jimmer Fredette from BYU, drafted by the Bucks and traded to the Kings. Drafted over Klay Thompson. Hashim Thabeet in 2009, number 2 overall pick from Connecticut. I mean, he was projected to do great things and did not. He got drafted over James Harden. Markelle Fultz, 2017, number 1 overall draft pick. Was drafted over Donovan Mitchell. And number one, Anthony Bennett, 2013, number one overall pick by the Cavs. He was drafted over Giannis. So there you have it. 10 of the biggest draft busts of the past 10 years. So Jabari Parker is, you know, on track for that as well. All right, let's talk a little ownership. So there's a new partial owner in the NBA for a team. And when I tell you his name, everyone's going to think of one team, and that team is not correct. So the newest partial owner in the NBA is Dwayne Wade. And when I say Dwayne Wade is now a partial owner in the NBA, my mind went straight to, oh, it's got to be the Miami Heat. But if you guessed the Miami Heat, you would be incorrect. Dwayne Wade is now the partial owner of the Utah Jazz. I'll let that sink in for a second because that blows my mind. Dwayne Wade had negotiations with Miami about becoming a partial owner, but for whatever reason, that just did not happen. Miami's owner expressed disappointment that Dwayne Wade did not restart negotiations with them. But Dwayne Wade has a connection with the Jazz's owner. He has a connection with Donovan Mitchell. So I can see that making sense. All right, let's talk about the play-in tournament for the NBA. So for those of you that don't know, because I didn't know, last year they implemented this new play-in tournament for their postseason tournament. All right, so how this works. After the regular season ends, and obviously before the tournament itself begins, there are play-in games. So what they do is the number 7 and the number 8 teams in each division play each other. The winner becomes the number 7 seed. The loser then goes to a play-in game. And they play against the winner of the number 9 and the number 10 teams in each league. So number 9 and 10 play each other. The winner then plays the loser of 7 and 8. The winner of 7 and 8 becomes the 7 seed. And then the other winner becomes the 8 seed. All right, so that, does that make sense? 7 and 8 play, the winner is the 7 seed. 9 and 10 play, the winner of that then plays number 8, or the winner of 9 and 10 then plays the loser of 7 and 8. The winner of that game then becomes the 8 seed. So right now, looking at the bracket, looking at the standings for the NBA, Golden State and San Antonio would be a play-in game, as well as Memphis, and now I can't remember who plays Memphis. Let me try to pull this up again. You gotta bear with me here. My internet does run a little slow. I had it up, I closed it, and now I regret it. It's probably gonna be easier to pull it up this way. Okay. Yeah, here we go. Wow, what is happening right now? Okay. Standings. There we go. So in the East, we would have the Heat and the Hornets play each other for the 7 seed. Then the Pacers and the Raptors. Raptors, by the way, are 23 and 34. Would play. And then the winner of that game would play the loser of the Heat Hornets for the 8 seed. In the Western Conference, the Mavericks and Grizzlies would play for the 7 seed. The loser would play the winner of the Warriors Spurs for the 8 seed. So that's where we stand at right now. So an interesting take. I think that's too many teams. I don't think it's necessary for that many teams to make the playoffs, especially when the 10 seed in the East is 11 games under 500. I think when I counted it earlier, there were 5 teams in total that would play in the play-in tournament that are under 500. Not necessary. If you're that worried about having a play-in because of teams being too close in win percentage, then have number 8 and number 9 play for the play-in for the number 8 seed. I think that solves your problem. You don't have to worry about anything further than that, but realistically, I think it was just fine how it was. Top 8 teams, have them play. Done. We'll see what happens. We'll see if this produces any kind of upsets or anything like that. All right, let's transition over to the NFL and let's talk win predictions. So I made a comment at the beginning that I thought this was too early. And I 100% think it's too early to have win projections come out yet. We haven't even had the NFL draft. Half these teams don't even know who's going to be on their team going into the season. Teams like the Dolphins and the Jets that have a ton of draft picks, and you're giving them a win projection already. I don't know. Seems silly. Seems too early. But I'll play along. So in April, win-loss projections, I'll give you my thoughts as well. Buffalo, let's see. So starting in the AFC East, Buffalo is at 10.5. I will give you the over on that. So we're at 17 games this season. So if they got over, that would be 11-6. I think that's doable for Buffalo in that division. Miami and New England both sit at 9. I think Miami gets over, even if it's just 10-7. I think they get over. New England, I'm going to go under. I think New England underperforms this year. I think Cam Newton struggles. They no longer have Julian Edelman. Their team's getting older. I know they signed a bunch of free agents, but I just don't think it's enough to warrant them going over 9 wins. The Jets are at 6 wins. You know, they're going to draft Zach Wilson. They're going to draft a bunch of other players. I think they need a year to figure it out before I'm willing to give them the over. So I'm going to go under 6 wins. AFC North. So Baltimore sits at 11. I'll give them the over. 12-5 does not seem unrealistic for Baltimore. So I'll go over 11 wins. Cleveland, 10 wins. As much as you like to think that the Browns are just going to stink it up and not do anything, I think they're putting together a nice little team there that could probably win more than 10 games. So I'm going to give them the over. Pittsburgh sits at 9 wins right now. I think Big Ben struggles mightily this year. They lost James Conner. I know they brought back Juju, but I just don't think that's enough to warrant. You know, they don't have that great of an offensive line. I think their offense struggles, and they're going to struggle. They're going to struggle to get over 500, much less 9 wins. So I'll give Pittsburgh the under. The Bengals are at 6.5. Again, it's like beating a dead horse. I'm going to say this over and over. The Bengals season will depend on if Joe Burrow can stay upright, if his offensive line can protect him, and how he recovers from his injury. My thoughts are the Bengals can get over 6.5 wins. All they got to do is get to 7-10. That's not unrealistic with that team. So that's where it stands right now. AFC South, Indy is sitting at 10 wins. That's probably the only push I'm going to give on this whole thing. Indy at 10 wins. I think there's just a lot to see there with Carson Wentz to know how they're going to perform. So I'll say they get to 10 wins, but I don't know that they get over. And I'm not willing to say they're going to go under either. Tennessee sitting at 9. I'm going to give them the over. I like Tennessee. I think they do well. And they'll get over 9 wins. Jacksonville at 6. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt and go over. I don't think they get over by much, but I think they get over. Houston at 5. I'm going under. There's too much turmoil. There's too much chaos in Houston. I can't knowingly say over on that. So Houston will go under 5. They'll have one of the top picks next season. AFC South. Kansas City is sitting at 12. Now, typically you would think 12 wins, you're not going to get much more than that. I'm going to give Kansas City the over on this. They still have a good team. I think they can do it. It makes sense. I still think they're the favorite in the AFC. The Chargers are sitting at 9. I think they go over. Justin Herbert does some good things. They got Joey Bosa on the defense. Among others, I think they have a good team. I think they do well. The Raiders are sitting at 8. Now, ESPN said they're going to go over. I don't think they will. I don't think 8 wins is reasonable. I think they're under 500. I think they're probably at 7-10, maybe 6-11, but I don't think they get to 8 wins. Denver at 7.5, they're going under. No, Denver is going to be terrible. I have no faith in Denver winning over 7.5 games. All right, going over to the NFC, Dallas, starting in the East. Dallas is at 9.5. They have a lot of people returning from injury. I think they can go over fairly easily. Washington is at 8. They got Ryan Fitzpatrick at wide receiver now. They have Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback now. They've got Terry McLaurin, Curtis Samuel at wide receiver. They're doing some good things out in Washington. I think they get the win. Now, can we please give them a team name so I can stop calling them the Washington football team? Philadelphia is at, and the Giants are both at 7. I think Philly underperforms. They'll go under 7 wins, and the Giants, I will give them the over. Again, the Giants have some players coming back from injury. Philly has a lot of question marks, so that's where I sit with those two. NFC North, Green Bay sits at 11. I think Aaron Rodgers puts on another good performance this year and leads them to probably 12, maybe 13 wins. Minnesota, 8.5. I'll go over. I'll go over with them. I think Minnesota can be over 500. Chicago sits at 7.5. And I'm going under on that one. Listen, I know their quarterback, Andy Dalton. I don't think he performs. Even though I know they just signed Marquise Goodwin, I don't think Dalton performs well enough to get them to 8 wins. And Detroit sitting at 5. I think Detroit will go over 5 wins. Not by much, but I think they will. All right, here's the most unpopular opinion I'm going to have of this whole thing. The NFC South. Tampa Bay sits at 11.5 right now as they're over-under in wins. I am going with the under. Listen, Tom Brady is getting old. I know he can still perform at a high quality, but I just think we start to really see the decline this season. I think this is it. I think this is the year where he starts to fall off. Now, I could be wrong. They could go win another Super Bowl, but I think Tampa underperforms this year. Now, not to say they won't make the playoffs, not to say even that they won't win the Super Bowl, but I don't think they get to 11.5 wins. New Orleans at 9.5. Now, typically without Drew Brees, I would have said there's no way, but that's all they lost was Drew Brees. They lost Von Bell, but I think they can still get to 9.5 wins. Carolina at 7.5, I think they go under. I give Sam Darnold one more year to develop partner connections with his team. But ask me again next year. But right now I'm going to go under 7.5. Atlanta's at 7. As much as I would like to go over, I can't. I can't do it. I just can't. I think they're going to underperform one more year. Here's the hoping to make the right select, or here's the hoping they grab a quarterback. But as I'm going to talk about here in a few minutes, they probably won't. All right, the NFC West. The Rams are sitting at 10.5. They got Matthew Stafford out there, quarterback now. They've got Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey. I'm going to go over 10.5 wins. Seattle's at 10. I'll give them the over. San Francisco's at 10. I'm going to give them the under. I think they struggle this year. And they might not struggle, but they're going to go under 10 wins. And Arizona's at 8 wins. I think they go over. I think Arizona can get to 500 this year. All right, let's talk NFL draft rumors real quick before we hit the break. So all three of these rumors have to do with the top 10 picks. Two in the top 4 picks. So obviously we know who number 1 and number 2 are going to be most likely. So the first rumor is going to have to do with the number 3 overall pick, and that is San Francisco. So what is San Francisco going to do? Are they going to take Trey Lance? They had a big really desire. That was the original rumor, was that Trey Lance was the pick. They really liked him. They were high on him. He was going to San Francisco, no questions asked. Pro Day came, Shanahan and San Francisco skipped Ohio State's Pro Day and went to Alabama's Pro Day. So then the rumor became Mac Jones. Mac Jones is going to be the pick. Write it down, Mac Jones to San Francisco, done deal. It's over. Then Mac Jones kind of underperformed. He was kind of mediocre on his Pro Day. Then you hear all this talk coming out of Columbus about Justin Fields really putting on a show on his pro day. San Francisco misses out. A few other teams miss out. Ohio State has another pro day. Shanahan and San Francisco flies out to see Justin Fields perform. Rumor is now that Justin Fields is going to be that number three overall pick. So it's changing week by week, day by day almost, it feels like. It could still change again. We're still 2 weeks away from this draft happening. Who knows? Obviously, there's no sure thing here. But right now, all signs are pointing to Fields going to San Francisco. So with Fields going to San Francisco, what does Atlanta do at number four? Do they take Trey Lance? Do they take Mac Jones? Do they take Kyle Pitts? They're not going to take a receiver. Well, rumor is right now that they have a very, very, very big interest in a player that could really help open up the field for them. It's not often that you have a tight end that is as versatile as Kyle Pitts is. So I wouldn't be upset with the pick. I just have a desire that Justin Fields would go play for the Atlanta Falcons. But the rumor right now is that Kyle Pitts goes to Atlanta at number four. Now, the last rumor I have here is the number eight overall pick. So Carolina goes out and they trade for Sam Darnold. So they've got their quarterback. They no longer need to worry about that position. So what do? Well, there's rumors that they're very interested, obviously, in Kyle Pitts. But as I just mentioned, Kyle Pitts is probably not going to last past number four. So if that's the case, what do? Do they take Devontae Smith? Do they take Jamar Chase if he falls there? Do they take Jalen Waddle? Do they take an offensive lineman? What do? The rumor right now is if they can't get Kyle Pitts, then they're going to look at the defense. And the defender that they're most likely going to look at is cornerback out of Alabama, Patrick Surtain. So that is the rumor right now. Again, we're still 2 weeks away, so a lot can change in the next 2 weeks. I'll give you my final mock draft next week, and we'll see if my mock draft lines up with those rumors or if the rumors change between now and then. I don't know. I can't say. It's too early. So I'm not sure. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. When I come back, we're going to jump right into college football. We'll talk spring games. We'll talk QB battles. We'll talk coaches on the hot seat or coaches to watch. We'll talk transfers to watch. So who's the big name transfers this year? And then we'll end today talking about Major League Baseball and everything that's going on there. So stay tuned. I'll be right back, and we'll keep talking. And I'm back. We are going to jump right into college football. So today was the start of the first spring games. So several teams played their spring games today or are playing their spring games today. So we're going to discuss some key things to watch as spring games start and as the spring season really gets underway as college football sets to return. So let's look at a few teams that played today, or actually, yeah, every one of them should be over by now. But let's talk about these ones that played and what the keys are for each of these spring games. So we're going to start in the SEC with Alabama. So Mac Jones is gone. Devontae Smith, Najee Harris, Jalen Waddle, Patrick Surtain, Christian Barmore. The list goes on and on. Alabama lost a lot of players. So now it's next man up for quarterback. So Bryce Young, obviously former five-star prospect. We saw him a little bit last season, but it's his time to shine now. So it's time to see if he can really lead this team or not. He does have some competition though. So he has Paul Tyson and Jalen Milroe also competing. So that is the biggest, that's really the biggest question with Alabama. Now, in my opinion, I would have probably, I'm curious what's happening with their wide receiver position, but QB is the biggest focus there. All right, staying in the SEC with Arkansas. So they're coming into a spring with running back depth that could be one of their strengths this year. So Traylon Smith took the majority of the workload last year because of injuries and an opt-out from Rakeem Boyd. And so as of right now, Traylon Smith is expected to be the primary back this year. But they also have a combination of Dominique Johnson and true freshman A.J. Green and Javion Hunt that could also take some carries also as well. All right, next up is Auburn. So the big thing here is how does Bo Nix develop? How does he move forward? They're going to have a first-year coach in Brian Harsin. So Harsin's real biggest challenge is going to be getting Bo Nix developed to that next level. He has the ability. He has a strong arm. He's athletic. He can make plays, but he's not very accurate, and he turns the ball over. So it's going to be a challenge for this new coach to make a difference there with Bo Nix. Looking at Georgia, so wide receiver George Pickens, who missed last year with the torn ACL, he comes back. But beyond him, they're still also pretty hurt. So Dominic Blaylock is on track to return from his torn ACL, as is Marcus Rosemead Jacksaint, who had a broken ankle. Actually, I read that wrong. So Pickens actually tore his ACL this March. So Pickens is out for the year, most likely. So Dominic Blaylock is set to return, though, from his ACL tear last year. And Marcus Rosemead Jacksaint is coming back from a broken ankle last year. So they have some youngsters there that will need to step up. LSU, they have a QB battle going on with four guys. But Max Johnson and Miles Brennan are the main two. So we'll see what happens there. Miami Hurricanes, Derek King is rehabbing his injured knee. So they've been getting some reps in for Tyler Van Dyke and Jake Garcia. All right, I'm going to skip down a little bit because I want to get to the one that I want to talk about, and that is the Ohio State Buckeyes. So the big question is, who replaces Justin Fields at quarterback? So we know we have a highly touted QB room. So the big question on everybody's mind, the big focus is, who is going to be QB1 for the Buckeyes this season? Obviously, we saw a little bit of C.J. Stroud last year. Jack Miller is there. Kyle McCord, who is the number 31 overall recruit this season, is there now. So it's not going to be something where we know coming out of today's spring game who's going to be QB1. Like, it's going to take a little bit of time. It's going to take the spring to really see what we have here. So stay tuned. The good thing for all three of these quarterbacks is that they have a plethora of wide receivers to throw to. So 7 of the top 8 players in receiving yards are returning. Plus, we have another highly touted freshman wide receiver. At USC, all eyes are on Keaton Slovis, who should form one of the best partnerships in the country with receiver Drake London. That's what they say. So we'll see how he plays. All right, let's switch over to transfers and other questions. So the first question was about optimism. What gives you the most optimism this year? So one guy actually answered, Phil Steele, tweeting about his preview, which preview he's finishing. So if you don't know who Phil Steele is, he puts out a magazine every year, a preseason magazine, where it's the most in-depth college football magazine that is out there. If you've never looked at it, usually Walmart carries it, but you can also order it online. I highly, highly, highly recommend it. If you like college football, if you're into really diving into teams and you're looking for accurate predictions, check out Phil Steele's preseason magazine. I typically try to buy it every year. I truly enjoy it. He goes very in-depth with his predictions, not just predicting college football playoff, but what players are going to bounce back, what rookies are going to really perform well. I mean, he does it all. He takes his time. He goes in-depth at every position for every team. I'm not just talking the top 10, top 25. I'm talking every team in the Power Five, the Group of Five. He dives deep. The independents, everybody that's in the FBS, he breaks it down. So, yeah, that makes me optimistic as well. All right, quarterback battles. Obviously, the biggest one is Ohio State. That's the one on everyone's mind. But another one is Texas and Texas A&M. So Texas A&M is replacing Kellen Mond. So they're looking at who's going to step up from him. They have Hudson Card and Casey Thompson. And oh, I'm sorry, that's Texas. Yes, I missed it. So I overlooked Texas A&M here. So Texas A&M has a stacked, or they had several stacked recruiting classes where they brought in quarterbacks. So Haynes King was the backup last year, and they also have Zach Calzada, who's another one. So they have a couple guys that have seen playing time that to look at. As far as Texas, they've got Hudson Card and Casey Thompson. Thompson played in relief of Sam Ellinger in the bowl game, in the Alamo Bowl. So he has a little bit of playing experience behind him. Let's see, coaches. So this one is not talking about the hot seat, but this is talking about the coach to watch, and that is Iowa State's Matt Campbell. So I have seen predictions where Iowa State, some have put them in the college football playoff. I'm not sold. Oklahoma is going to be a very good team in the Big 12 this year. So it's going to come down to whether Iowa State can knock off Oklahoma first off. So I'm not sold on Iowa State making the college football playoff. But a lot of people are interested to see what Matt Campbell can do at Iowa State. Steve Sarkisian, he is now at Texas, so seeing what he can do there will be interesting. Some other coaches to watch: Jamie Chadwell at Coastal Carolina. So they had a surprisingly great 2020 season. So it'll be interesting to see what he can do there this year to follow that up. I agree with this article. If he can put on another good year this year, we could be looking at a very big paycheck from a Power Five school next year. So if you think about teams that need coaches, that coaches are on the hot seat, Chadwell could be an option for them. This guy says to look at the second year coaches that are out there, because if we remember last year, we didn't really have a spring, no spring games. Season started late for most teams, so these second-year coaches are getting their first taste of what spring is for college football. So at Baylor, you have Dave Aranda. Florida State, you have Mike Norvell. And at Mississippi State, Mike Leach. Greg Schiano, Jimmy Lake, Mel Tucker, Jeff Scott. I mean, there's a bunch of coaches who have had a year in their position, but they haven't had a full year per se. They haven't had a full spring. All right, which newcomer or transfer is worth watching? Oklahoma has several freshmen in Marvin Mims. Newcomers or transfers. So Marvin Mims was a star as a freshman. Mario Williams Jr. looks to be this year's freshman to watch. So wide receiver Mario Williams, let's see what he can do for Oklahoma. At Florida State, Mackenzie Milton is there. So if you remember, Milton was with UCF, dislocated his right knee, and suffered ligament, nerve, and artery damage. This says against UCF. Did he do that at Florida State? I'm going to sidebar this one for a second, because I could have sworn. This article is wrong. Okay. They just typed the one word wrong. So it wasn't against UCF that he got hurt. It was while he was playing at UCF that he got hurt. Here it is. November 23rd, 2018. Last game of the regular season against South Florida. Early in the second quarter, Milton pulled the ball on a belly option and ran right. He was tackled by two South Florida players, with one hitting him right below the knee. This caused him to dislocate his knee. He was carted off. Extensive damage to the arteries, nerves, in his right knee. Emergency surgery was undertaken to restore arterial blood flow. So, yes, that was when he was at UCF. I had to check that because I knew that he was not already at Florida State when that injury happened. So I want to make sure I gave the correct information there. So, newcomer, now he's at Florida State. He's back. He's recovered. So how will that play off on the field? That'll be interesting to watch. And then Ty Thompson at Oregon. So Tyler Shough transfers to Texas Tech. As I've mentioned, for next year's draft, he's one of the top quarterbacks to watch. So now Oregon has to scramble to find a QB1, and they have Ty Thompson to step up. And also Texas Tech transfer Alan Bowman. So he is now at Michigan. So we'll see what happens there. A lot of bold predictions about the Pac-12 making the playoff. So Oregon, USC, those are the teams to watch in terms of Pac-12 teams making the playoff. All right, let's move on to Major League Baseball as we come towards the end of this podcast. So let's talk injuries first, because we, as I've mentioned before, I expected to see a lot more injuries this year. We had a shortened season last year, so pitchers aren't accustomed to throwing a lot of innings. So we're going to see pitchers get injured. We're going to see pitchers have lower pitch counts and less innings overall. But overall, as a team, you're going to see a lot more injuries because last year, they played a 60-game season. And, yeah, they had a full offseason this year, but that's a big difference to re-prepare yourself for a full 162-game slate when you haven't done that for 2 years. So looking through the injury report right now, I see Ketel Marte, second baseman for Arizona, has a hamstring injury. So he is on his way back, did some light running, played catch, hit off a tee. So he's on his way back. Tyler Clippard, relief pitcher, he's on the 60-day DL. Joaquin Soria is on the 10-day DL, so he had his bullpen session moved up from Saturday to Friday, so he is on his way back as well. Looking at the Braves, Ozzie Albies is day-to-day with a calf injury, so he's not starting today. Ender Inciarte is on the 10-day DL. Drew Smyly, he has forearm inflammation. Not considered serious, but he could miss a start. Mike Soroka is on the 10-day DL with the shoulder. So no timetable yet there. Max Fried is on the 10-day DL. Looking at the Orioles, Chris Davis is on the 60-day DL. With the Red Sox, Chris Sale. So his elbow, he's on the 60-day DL as of April 8th. He's advanced to throwing off of flat ground from 120 feet, but has yet to get back on a mound. So he still has a ways to go. Let's see. The Cubs, Kyle Hendricks is experiencing an illness, so he is expected to start Sunday still. With the White Sox, obviously we know Eloy Jimenez is on the 60-day DL with a pectoral injury. Tim Beckham's day-to-day. With the Reds, Alex Blandino's on the 10-day DL. Mike Moustakas is ill, so he's not playing today. Lorenzen just got moved to the 60-day DL, so his shoulder. He received a platelet-rich plasma injection for his right shoulder strain and is resting. It's super early, and he's just trying to move it around right now. So we will see what happens there. But he just got moved to the 60-day DL. Aristides Aquino is on the 10-day DL with a wrist injury, so he'll be out 5 to 6 weeks. Shogo Akiyama is on the 10-day DL. He could begin playing in rehab games in the next week to 2 weeks. Chris Owings with the Rockies, he's on the 10-day DL with a sprained left thumb. Negative x-ray, so that's good. Ian Desmond is out. Oh, yeah, Ian Desmond is opting out for this season, so quote-unquote for now. Going to the Tigers, Miguel Cabrera on the 10-day DL with a biceps injury. So he's out for this whole series against the Pirates. Julio Teheran is on a 60-day DL. With the Astros, they've got several players out on the COVID protocols. So they've got Jordan Alvarez is out. Jose Altuve is out. Alex Bregman's out. Lance McCullers Jr. is day-to-day. The Astros have a large amount of players that are on the DL or out right now. Pedro Baez is out 10 days. A couple guys on the 60-day DL, Justin Verlander. He's resumed throwing now, so he's starting to make a comeback there. The Royals, Adalberto Mondesi is on the 10-day DL. With the Angels, Dexter Fowler's on the 60-day DL with a knee injury. Anthony Rendon's on the 10-day DL with a groin injury. The Dodgers, they just saw Cody Bellinger go out on a hairline fracture. He's on the 10-day DL. We'll see if that increases. Gavin Lux is day-to-day with a wrist injury. Joe Kelly's on the 10-day DL with an undisclosed reason. Miami, Eliezer Hernandez is on the 10-day DL with a bicep injury. Milwaukee, Yelich is day-to-day with a back injury. Lorenzo Cain's on the 10-day DL. Colton Wong's on the 10-day DL with an oblique injury. Just a lot of injuries is what I'm getting at here. I mean, I could go through all the teams, Andrelton Simmons. The Mets have quite a few. I'll go through just the main ones. So Gary Sanchez is day-to-day. Luis Severino's on the 60-day DL. But we're just seeing Bryce Harper's day-to-day, an increase, significant increase in injuries this year, which I expected. I called it. Manny Machado's day-to-day. Denilson Lamet is on the 10-day DL. Austin Nola's on the 10-day DL. So hopefully they can figure this out. What's causing all these injuries, how to stop it, how to get these guys ready, because this is not looking good. All right, let's look at the power rankings, because the power rankings have changed. So the one thing that has not changed is the Los Angeles Dodgers are still the unanimous number one team in Major League Baseball. But that's really not a surprise. As they word it, it's the Dodgers and then everyone else so far. So the big questions going into this, do our voters favor the Padres over the Yankees, even with Tatis being out on the injured list, which he's back now? Which American League teams are coming up? And what did our voters make of hot starts by the Reds, Red Sox, and Angels? So we're going to answer that. And then the big question at the bottom of the rankings, has anyone played poorly enough to move the Pirates out of number 30? So Dodgers again, number one, Padres still number two. So they're still holding on. The Yankees are number three, Astros number four, Twins number five, Braves six. So Braves move up one. White Sox are at seven. Angels are up to number eight. Mets are down to number nine. And the Rays are down to number 10. So we talked about the Angels. So they jumped from 10 to 8. We talked about the Red Sox. They moved from 21 to number 12. And we talked about the Reds. They moved from 19th to 13th. So the Reds starting to get some love here in the power rankings. So we'll see if it lasts. The Cardinals are down from 13th to 16th. The Giants are up from 23rd to 19th. Cubs fell far, 14th to 20th. And then the Nationals, likewise, 15 to 21. And did the Pirates move? They did not. Although, the Rockies are hot on their heels trying to get the last, the worst team in Major League Baseball. So that's what your power rankings look right now. I'm going to end today by looking at the standings. So looking at last podcast, I want to see if anything changed from what the playoffs would look like right now. So last week in the AL, the Astros were the one seed. And yes, that has changed dramatically. So the Red Sox now have the one seed. And then the 2 and 3 is the Mariners and the Royals. So that has changed. And the wild card then is the Angels and the Indians. So there, yes, there is a lot of difference. And then in the National League, the Dodgers are number one. 2 and 3 is the Reds and the Mets. And then the wild card would be the Giants. And the Padres. So that's what we would look at right now. So I don't know if I'll look at this every week. But we'll look. We'll take a look at it. So in week one, we had the Astros, we had the Twins, Orioles, We have the Angels, Red Sox. And then we have the Reds, the Dodgers, and Phillies. And the Cardinals, Padres. And my prediction was the Astros and Dodgers. Do I have enough time? I do. I have just enough time. So week two, we have the number one seed is the Red Sox. We have the Mariners and the Royals. And then wild card is, who did I say? The Angels and the Indians. National League, we have the Dodgers. Then we have the Reds and Mets. And the wild card was the Giants and Padres. So my prediction this week, the Dodgers out of the National League. Of course, that's not going to change. Out of those five teams in the American League, I'm going to go with the wild card team, and that being the Angels. So we're going to go with an LA World Series here, the Angels and the Dodgers. So some changes in the power rankings, some changes in the standings, and overall what looks like it's going to be a good season. So that is going to do it for the podcast today. Like I said, next week, mock draft 2.0, final mock draft before the NFL draft. So we'll talk all NFL, and then we'll talk other things. We'll talk a little bit of Major League Baseball, I'm sure. And we'll see what comes out of the spring games and the NBA playoffs. So thank you, as always, for listening. Don't forget to leave a comment. Drop into my Instagram, Rounding Third Sports. Drop a comment, like a photo. Mention me to a friend. Whatever you can do, get my name out there. Rounding Third Sports. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back next week.